You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 27th of December 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, as 2015 draws to a close, we're taking the opportunity to speak to some of our favourite guests and contributors to get their take on a pretty extraordinary past 12 months. Whether it's China's slowdown, various problems besetting countries far and wide from Greece to Brazil to Russia and more, to the truly global challenges of migration and terrorism, this was a year with some volatile and unpredictable events. Let's begin our review of 2015 with Douglas Rothstein, Head of Interest Rate Strategies for Developed Markets at UBS Private Wealth Management. Douglas shares insights on the last 12 months, looking back to April's bond market sell-off.
At the end of last year, we saw inflation on a long-term downtrend. And of course, the mandate of the European Central Bank is to have price stability and have inflation close to their target of 2%. So as inflation kept moving down, it became more and more obvious that the ECB would have to take firm action to meet their mandate. So people began, market participants began to believe that the ECB would begin to buy bonds. And so finally in January of this year, the ECB actually announced their QE program and that they would start buying bonds in March. So as inflation was moving down even prior to the ECB announcement, participants in the market started buying bonds ahead of the ECB, essentially, expecting that ECB would drive interest rates down and they would profit from that and eventually sell the bonds back to the ECB.
And Douglas explains the global impact of this.
What happened was interest rates, as everybody saw, especially in Germany, where 10-year bonds got down to single basis point figures. So in other words, the yield on 10-year bonds got extremely close to zero. And this is a level that doesn't really make sense for any kind of end investor. So in other words, things really went too far. And then once the ECB actually started buying, it was a kind of a buy the rumor, sell the fact. And everybody started to sell bonds all at the same time. So it was due to a number of things, including investor positioning. So investors were actually owning these bonds ahead of the ECB. And as well, things such as the actual setup of the bond buying program caused the sell-off. In other words, the ECB was the limits that they set on the program, in other words, that they would only buy bonds yielding above minus 0.2%. As short-term bonds got pushed down to that limit, investors moved further out the curve, buying longer-term bonds, and this is what caused the bond pricing to become so extreme. And then finally, the inflation numbers, especially for May, that came in as a big surprise, and that seems to have caused an additional fairly large sell-off in the market. But nevertheless, I think we should keep in mind that since the middle of the year, actually, bond yields, I think, have been fairly stable since then. So people spend a lot of time talking about volatility, but actually the moves in interest rates themselves this year, aside from that big sell-off in the middle of the year, have been actually less than they have been historically.
Douglas Rothstein. And we stay in Zurich to check in with Daniel Kaut, UBS Chief Economist and Chief Investment Officer for Switzerland. We asked Daniel about events back at the start of the year and the SNB's surprise January announcement.
Yeah, of course, it was a big shock to the whole Swiss economy, especially for the export sector, tourism, which have seen the currency in which they price their products appreciate by 15-20% in one go. And that, of course, has completely turned around the outlook for Switzerland, for the Swiss export sectors. But overall, the initial shock was bigger, or the fear that would lead us into a recession was probably a bit overdone. Actually, the Swiss economy has coped quite well with the situation. But still, it was a huge surprise. Nobody expected it at that time. And we're still trying to cope with the situation.
And what were the global implications of this?
It showed, first of all, investors who had hoped that the Swiss franc would provide a safe haven actually got confirmation, because the Swiss franc appreciated even more after the Swiss National Bank had to let that artificial peg go. That's certainly for the international investors. So international investors who were invested in Swiss assets made a nice gain in 2015. It also showed that central banks do and can use extreme measures, because the Swiss National Bank then had to introduce a new tool to weaken the Swiss franc, and that was negative interest rates to an extent that we would not have thought it would be possible a couple of years ago. So they lowered the short end of the yield curve to minus 75 basis points. And today the whole yield curve in Swiss government bond yields out to the 12, 13 years durations are in negative territory. That's really amazing.
Daniel Kaut there. And another of our experts, Simon Smiles, picked out the January moves by the SNB in his review of the year. We'll hear from him next. Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, is a regular guest on the Bulletin with UBS. He picks out his most notable events of the year gone.
I think three things that stood out. One was clearly January 15th when the Swiss peg broke. January 14th, if you'd asked any market participant, I think all of them would have told you there was no way the Swiss National Bank would abandon its peg, and then a day later it did. The reminder there is, on one hand, not to pick up pennies in front of a steamroller. On the other hand, it's also that there is to remember that there is no 100% dead certainty in investing. I think the second key thing that I remember from this year is the impact the stronger dollar had on the US economy and also US earnings. Back towards the end of 2014, the dollar started to appreciate, but all pundits in the markets and many investors, including ourselves, did not expect a stronger dollar would actually have a materially negative impact on either US corporate earnings or indeed the US economy, given how large that economy is and how inwardly directed. 2015 proved those assumptions wrong. Even the largest economy in the world, when it faces a very sharp appreciation of its currency, it has negative impacts on both the economy and earnings. The third, I guess, thing that I remember from this year is the precipitous falls in oil prices and just the ramifications that a sharply lower oil price can have with respect to negative outcomes for the US high yield sector, for energy, equities, etc. Previously, with more moderate and modest deteriorations in oil prices, it's actually been a net positive for the economy and for corporate earnings.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look towards the key geopolitical events that defined 2015. Something many of our analysts highlighted when it came to reviewing the past 12 months was the impact, once again, of some of those geopolitical events that are at once ever-present concerns and yet unpredictable in nature. Terrorism is one of those, and the challenges of dynamic surges in migration is another. Steve Bloomfield is the executive editor of Monocle. We asked him about the impact of migration in 2015.
Migration and all the issues surrounding it was one of the huge issues for 2015, particularly for Europe. From a political point of view, but also from an economic point of view as well, there are the short-term costs that Europe has to deal with. There is also the question of how European economies cope with an influx of refugees. But one part of the economic question that wasn't really dealt with much was the issue of actually the benefit, the long-term benefit that many countries with falling birth rates are going to have from accepting new refugees, and also, crucially, and not all countries are doing this, but allowing them to work.
Terrorism, too, had a sadly predictable impact on economic and political life, especially recently in Europe. Steve explains what impact this has had in the year just gone.
At the heart of the idea of Europe is this dream of freedom of movement, and that is not just freedom of movement of people and of labour, but that's of capital as well. And Europe has thrived over the last 50, 60 years, and on the whole it really has thrived, by breaking down those borders and allowing companies to operate in different countries, by allowing people to move between nations within Europe relatively easily. And one of the consequences of the increased fear of terrorism, and of course, the increased actuality of terrorism as we saw in Paris, is that governments will begin to think about closing down borders and making it harder for people to move from one country to another, making it harder for, as a consequence, for businesses to operate across borders. And that is one of the things that, in the coming years, as we get used to this new reality, governments are going to have to work out what price they're willing to pay for security.
The insights of Monocle's executive editor, Steve Bloomfield. Next up on the show, we switch our sights to China. Thomas Deng is UBS Regional CIO for Greater China and Chief China Strategist. First, we asked him to focus on the Chinese slowdown.
Apparently, the growth has been decelerating from last year's 7+% to this year's sub 7% growth. Those old economy, for example, industrial fixed asset investment has been decelerating. However, we also seen a transformation from industrial focused economy to more services driven economy. So I would say on one hand, yes, we are seeing a slowdown, but on the other hand, we are seeing the economy is transforming.
And what does Thomas make of market moves in 2015? What about the equity market bubble, for instance?
The Chinese onshore market has experienced a roller coaster. It started the year with strong upside, then had some volatility, largely because of the regulators' crackdown on official financing, to i.e. the margin lending to investors, and that led to a sharp risk-off, and hence the market correction. But the overall Chinese onshore market has actually ended up in a positive territory year-to-day. I think the market depends on which index you look. The CSI 300, which is equivalent of the U.S. standard pool, has actually edged up around 6% year-to-day. The Shanghai Composite ended up in a positive territory as well. More small market, small cap focus, and the China X market, which is China's equivalent of NASDAQ, even up more strongly, up 30+%.
Markets were apparently caught out by yuan depreciation we saw in August too. What did Thomas make of the moves?
That currency flexibility apparently caught the market off the guard, and the market were worried about whether that's a sign of further depreciation or even worse than expected slowdown, which triggered market a strong reaction and, of course, had a global repercussion, triggered the global market down. However, the market has apparently stabilized on the back of, first of all, the currency later on stabilized on the back of, number one, I think that overall China still have a strong balance foreign exchange reserve and continue to enjoy strong trade surplus, and despite a reduction or outflow of capital. At the same time, the high-profile commitment by senior Chinese leaders pledging not to maintain a strong currency should also has apparently eased market concern.
That's the view from Hong Kong, and we'll have more insights from around the world looking to another key global financial centre and the machinations of another central bank next. Mike Ryan is Chief Investment Strategist for UBS Wealth Management Americas, and we sought his view and review of the year in terms of how the US Federal Reserve performed. Whilst we're looking back at all of 2015, in terms of the Fed and interest rates, it's understandable that the events of the past few days are front and centre. But we start with Mike's review of the whole of the last 12 months.
With regard to the Fed, I think it was a year where we were anticipating that the Fed was going to begin the process of normalisation. The question and concern, of course, was when they were going to do it and how they were going to do it. We obviously had a false start in September. There was expectations that the Fed would go ahead and begin the process of raising rates. But because of global conditions and volatility in markets, they were unable to do it. So they deferred that move until December. So finally, we got in December. What we've been long waiting for is the beginning of the process of rate normalization. So I think the way the markets reacted were understandably mixed. There are those who look at the move to raise rates as premature and inappropriate given the fact that the recovery is still on uneven ground and you still have some deflationary headwinds. And there are others who believe that the Fed needs to begin the process now of moving off of zero rates partly because the economic conditions warrant it, and partly to make sure that the Fed has optionality down in the future. So there's a very big split between those who view the Fed as having perhaps moved preemptively and perhaps even in a way that was not the most appropriate manner, and those who believe that the Fed risks falling behind the curve if they defer rate hikes any further.
People talk about the global impact of the long-awaited interest rate rise, but what does that really look like? Mike Ryan again.
Let's first of all put in context, I mean, it is a quarter percentage point move. It is a relatively modest move, and the Fed has signaled that they're going to also move in a very deliberate and measured manner going forward. That said, this is the first rate hike we've seen in nearly a decade. We have seen the major central bank, largest and most important central bank across the financial markets, begin the process of resetting rates. And there's obviously going to be impact across the globe. Where we think that impact will be most acutely felt is once again going to be in the emerging markets. Because as the dollar strengthens, as rates in the U.S. begin to rise, it does put some pressure on emerging market currencies and also forces some decisions with regard to central banks in the emerging markets.
Let's look in more detail next at the emerging market space that Mike Ryan was just talking about. All year, we've enjoyed brilliant insights from Jorge Mariscal, Regional CIO Emerging Markets at UBS. We asked him to look back at 2015 in this space, starting in Brazil.
I think Brazil is immersed in its own political dynamics. And the two key defining events in Brazil were, one, the presidential election where, by a very narrow margin, Dilma Rousseff was re-elected for a second term. There were hopes that a more pro-market government was going to be elected, and the opposition came close to defeating Rousseff, but in the end, Rousseff won. What is interesting is that a few months later, she's now facing impeachment, and that is the second defining moment for Brazil this year. The president has now been targeted for impeachment process. We don't know whether it will succeed, but certainly it's important change of events.
And what does Jorge make of the international emerging markets picture in 2015?
There are some global issues that have impacted emerging markets clearly, and one of them is commodities. We had a dismal year for commodities, whether it's energy or industrial metals or even precious metals and agriculture. That is a key headwind for many emerging markets, particularly Latin America, Africa, Middle East. The other defining feature of this year that was a difficult year, as you said, was China. China has been slowing down meaningfully, and the country is struggling to find a new growth model when exports are no longer the key driver and government spending has been cut back as well.
If we're talking about markets under pressure, it would be remiss not to include some discussion of Greece. Themis Themistocleous is head of the European Investment Office at UBS Wealth Management. Here's his summary of the past 12 months.
It's been a year of a lot of noise with very little overall result as far as the conditions that Greece got out of European or the creditors, but obviously at a huge cost to Greece because that whole situation with Syriza negotiations set back the economy substantially, which wasn't necessarily needed.
And where finally does Themis believe the fault for all of this rests?
Clearly, they didn't expect the elections in Greece. I think they most probably hoped that the previous government would have been able to continue to govern and implement more reforms. So in some ways, maybe the Europeans and creditors underestimated the resistance of the population. And obviously, from the new government, Syriza's point of view, I think they underestimated the resistance they were going to get from the creditors and basically overestimated their negotiating power. But the reforms already started many years ago and they were continued, but obviously at a much slower pace than they should have been.
That's Themis Themistocleous, bringing us to the end of this 64th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, looking back at the biggest and most important stories of 2015 here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. Next week, we turn the spotlight ahead and consider the stories, themes and trends that could shape 2016. Until then, it's goodbye. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.